Solak and Bertrand.
While you work.
Pretty much guarantee a two-year deal for Brady.
You expect us to believe that?
Adam Jones wraps up the day.
And he scores.
I mean, you're talking about dominant run.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You don't have to lift a finger to wake up to Toucher and Rich.
No way.
Just tell your smart speaker to play. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.985 the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. John, give the people the nightmare.
What's that?
Give the people the nightmare.
What are we talking about?
I'm lost. Everyone in the other room is shaking their heads and going crazy.
There's a little slice of hell happening on the roads right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Of course. 93 South. Accident inside the tunnel. I just was doing
thanks
another thing.
Us, John. Thanks.
Accident inside the O'Neill Tunnel on 93 South. Don't bother coming into work if you live on the North Shore.
Ooh. So what? Oh, boy. If you have to go through that tunnel every day, I don't know how you do it. That is the stuff of nightmares.
What's the longest you've been stuck in a tunnel?
Never.
Oh, you see, so you've never been in traffic where you were stuck in a tunnel?
I've been in traffic. I've never been, there's never been an accident in the tunnel.
Okay, well, then I have. And it was, I think, probably about 25, 30 minutes.
Oh, Jesus.
And by minute 10, you're starting to have mini fits.
It's
in your car.
How about 10 seconds in? Apparently, it's an hour and 20 minutes to get through all that stuff. I'm sorry, 2 hours to get through all that stuff. I'm telling you, if you go through that, I would find any way on the planet to get wherever I was going except to go through that tunnel. The only time that it's completely necessary is going to the airport. Other than that, I'm doing everything in my power to avoid that thing.
You know, and I know that things have changed since 2006, but I will never forget after the big dig that had that front page of the Boston Herald that said they used duct tape, and it was after that panel fell off and hit
killed
the car
somebody, yeah.
And killed someone.
Yeah.
Like every time I go in the tunnel, I think of that front page of the Boston Herald. I just
because it's unnatural.
It is.
You're not supposed to be underground, under the water, in some tube. And then it's completely out of your control.
Do you freak out when you go to the airport, too? Because you have to go through a tunnel to get there.
That one's tough because there's, no emergency lanes. If you go, via Sturo, I forget, and it's just those two lanes where you can't cross. The Callahan, that's right. There's no, emergency lane
Callahan,
left to right.
So you're Ted Williams, right I mean, you got to go.
That's white knuckling. That tunnel does it for me. Not as much as the O'Neill Tunnel, but the Callahan Tunnel, that gets me.
In the O'Neill, but the problem with the O'Neill Tunnel, is this Ted Williams Tunnel?
The accident?
Yeah.
No, it's the O'Neill Tunnel. It's okay. 93 South.
Okay, sorry. I don't really have to go through the tunnels because when I go to the airport, we always take a car. So if I'm in someone else's car, I'm better than if I'm alone by myself driving the car. Because then I don't feel as powerless, if that makes any sense.
It's
someone else's responsibility.
Sure.
I handle traffic in general differently when I'm not driving as opposed to when I am. So
yeah, same with me.
I understand that.
But, I mean, that is just every day to roll the dice like that, every day to go... I got to do this today, and just knowing that a nightmare could lay ahead at any point. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I just drove past that accident, actually. So it's on, exit 20. There's a median where you can get on exit 20 or get off. Some dude literally smashed the median. He's getting towed right now. His whole front end is caved in. Didn't hit any other car, literally just hit the median.
How's traffic? How bad is it?
Terrible. Literally terrible. Yeah. I just spent 15 minutes in the tunnel just to get to exit 20, and I'm not even a quarter of the way through the tunnel.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It sucks. I apologize.
Godspeed, my friend.
I'm already through it. He literally already hit it. The ambulance is gone and everything, so it's almost over.
Oh. Yeah, that's got to be a good feeling.
Well, the residual is only going to be for about 3 hours.
And the other thing is that, if it happens in the tunnel,
yeah,
then, how do you get there?
Yeah, I mean, right. How, if you're the emergency crew, it's tough sometimes. Especially, I mean, as I said, at least in that tunnel, I think there's, those lanes where they'll be able to get by. But you go in the Callahan Tunnel. Oh, no. I mean, your side view mirror is almost hitting the wall.
Yeah, that I fear.
And then imagine if you break down there and you're on a curve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, so it's no one's fault. If you break down there and I'm going around a curve going 60 and whoops-a-daisy, here's someone's car, I'm smashing into it.
Fred, I used to own a car that the only way to keep it from stalling out and having a hard time cranking back up again is I had to constantly like rev the engine. Now, it was a manual, so I would just put it in neutral and do it that way. However, every once in a while when I'd be driving, it was still... So being stuck in a tunnel, which I've done before in that car, was an absolute nightmare because I knew that I could make it 10 times worse. It's probably wildly irresponsible for me to be driving that car anyway. But then again, when we're in college, we kind of do what we do to get around.
It's funny. A guy here at the station was like, you know, how do you get here? Which, and I come the right way. I come, I go 9 to Mass Ave. It's two turns, basically. And he's like, well, you know, it's dark, that could be dangerous. I said, are you out of your mind? No, tunnels. That's what's dangerous. Tunnels.
You're not this way about bridges, are you?
No, like 7 Mile Bridge.
Oh, yeah, the one that goes to Key West. Like, that is, I've been on that once.
I can't see the
that
end.
That would freak me out. Oh, that, dude.
Is it that? I've never been on it.
To be on a bridge and not be able to see the end of it is terrifying.
And I guarantee you that back when I used to drive it quite a bit. Oh. And I guarantee you that it's different now. It used to be one lane going each way. So if there was any, if a car stalled out, you were trapped. Like, and how they would get an emergency vehicle there is they would have to go the wrong way down the bridge. So you have to wait for everyone to go the rest of the way to go to that bridge. The ones that I can't even watch it on YouTube is to get to the Outer Banks where it's like an 8 mile bridge into like a 3 mile tunnel into like an 8 mile bridge into a 3 mile tunnel. Like, you're just over and underwater for like 25 miles or something. And there's people, and it's like, doo, 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 and these people are having the time of their lives. And they're, I mean, that's, you're not supposed to do that.
There is a bridge that I don't know which one it is, that goes into Rhode Island that is terrifying.
Jamestown, Newport.
No, okay, no. I don't think it's the Newport one. It might be the Jamestown.
That's the one before you get to the Newport.
Well, no, that's if you're going from Providence into Newport.
Oh, yeah. Before that one. That skeeves me. Out.
Oh, that's a huge bridge. Yeah,
Jamestown, you should have seen the old one. The old one was much worse.
Well, you don't have to take, if you take M24 into Newport, you don't go over like bridges.
That's different. This one's coming south from Providence 95 to Route 4.
Yeah, I've made the mistake of, we visited people in Providence and then went to Newport and I'm like, oh, Jesus, now I got to do this thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, like, you could run down the bridge. Like, in the tunnel, like, you can't run.
There's no escape. You just have to pull a Stallone in daylight. You got to crawl through the vents. That's the second Stallone movie reference of the morning, by the way.
Hey. Yeah, because like in Pittsburgh, my dad and I because you walk Pittsburgh pretty much.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have the three bridges over the three rivers. And so, like, we would walk over the bridge, you know, like a mile and a half, and then you get halfway over and you're like, oh, geez.
Anybody listening to us while flipping out right now, stuck in that tunnel? 617-779-0985.
Dan O'Brien went to Australia and, like, climbed over the big-ass bridge there.
The main bridge next to the Sydney Opera House, you actually climb it while traffic is going below. It's one of, like, there's, like, three of them in the world. Yeah, it was pretty...
Ever.
Pretty crazy.
I have no idea why would you do that to yourself?
Maybe we should do a bit called Who's Having a Fit. If you're having a fit right now, just call us. 617-779-0985. Are you trapped somewhere? You having a fit?
See, the thing is like, if you go through the tunnel, like, you could just knock yourself out with booze.
How long is it? I've never been through there. How long does it take to get through there?
Boy, I think it's like 45 minutes.
Is it really?
Dance is 90 minutes. Maybe it is.
See,
I don't mind that because, once again, I can find a happy place on a train. I'll try to fall asleep.
Plus, yeah, and plus, if I had to, I could just anesthetize myself to the degree that I wouldn't feel anything.
I said, who's having a fit in the lines?
The lines are jammed. Man, look at that.
Danny, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was basically going to call in. You want to talk about nightmare fuel. That tunnel from England to France is 31 miles long, and you can actually drive through it now. There's people that drive.
Oh, yeah.
Every day.
That's it.
And I don't think the decision as to whether or not you should drive or take a plane has ever been easier than when the tunnel comes into play.
31 miles of driving under the sea. There is no reason in the world to do that. Let's go to Dan. Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, stuck in brutal traffic. Listening to you guys talk about traffic is almost as bad as listening to Amy Lawrence.
It's not traffic, it's hell on earth.
Great radio.
Hang on a second. I am sharing with you deep-seated fears of mine. I'm confessing to you
neuroses
that I'm opening up to you, Dan.
I've got a 23-mile commute, and I've been in the car for an hour and a half.
Not in a tunnel.
I'm still a half hour out. So, listening to you guys talk about, you guys can't make fun of Amy Lawrence anymore if you're going to do this brutal radio.
What kind of cheese you like? You like cheese?
Do you talk to your dog?
What's your favorite football snack?
Do you talk to your cat?
All right, so Bert Breer will join us. I mean, here we are giving you our deep-seated fears.
I just want to call as you're having a fit.
I don't think there's any shortage.
If you can actually get your fingers to move at 7:30, we got tickets to see the season opener. Texans and Patriots. We'll be back with Breer.
The games are only half of it. Sure and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich, 10 minutes away from getting you tickets to Sunday's opener. New England Patriots, Houston Texans, Bert Breer, of course, from MMQB. Hello, Bert.
Hello, Fred.
What do you make of the Le'Veon Bell situation and the way the Steelers responded to it yesterday?
Well, I mean, on the front end of it, I think this is a little bit of knife twisting by Le'Veon Bell and the way the player is saying, because, you know, there's no financial benefit to him doing this because he can't do a new deal. That ship sailed on July 15th. And so I think part of this for the player is, you made things difficult on me, so I'm not going to make things easy on you now. The flip side of it, and the really stunning side of it is, you know, what you referenced, which was the offensive lineman, Ramon Foster, Marquise Pouncey, Alejandro Villanueva, all coming out yesterday against Le'Veon Bell. And, you know, the Steelers have dealt with a lot of drama over the years. They've actually been pretty good at managing that stuff and not letting it get in the way of winning. But this, to me, is in a little bit of a different category because it's very, very rare that you ever hear a player comment about another player's contract situation. You know, the code in those locker rooms is, there are two areas you don't go when it comes to your teammates. It's family and it's money. And the fact that not one, not two, but three of the guys blocking for him were willing to do that, I think says something and certainly makes this worth monitoring going forward.
Okay, I'll give you three reasons why I like all of this, if you're a Steelers fan. One, it seems the team is galvanized and they are all on the same page and that they are holding Le'Veon Bell accountable for not really caring on the success of the team. Second of all, Le'Veon Bell, whenever he comes back, is playing for a contract. And third, the idea of a healthy Le'Veon Bell with little wear on him going into the playoffs has got to be frightening for people in the AFC.
Yeah, I mean, I can see all that. And look, I think that part of this certainly could be that maybe he told his teammates that you heard this coming out of the locker room earlier in the week. Maybe he promised his teammates that he would be there on Wednesday. And he's not there on Wednesday, which is a big day. It's a game plan day. So, you know, that certainly could be part of them coming out with a unified front. Here's the thing. I understand what you're saying about him coming out and having a monster year because he's playing for a contract. I just worry about this being in his head a little bit now, you know, and the idea of protecting himself, the idea of, you know, just the goal being getting to the finish line and the finish line not being a Super Bowl, the finish line being, you know, the middle of March when free agency starts, that would worry me a little bit. And so,
worry other teams, though? I mean, if you go out there and it's obvious you're protecting yourself, I mean, he's going to be 27 next year looking for a deal. And if you're also, if you're playing like that, aren't the chances of you getting injured even higher?
Yeah, and that's, it's a tough balance, definitely. But, you know, I think that stuff exists. You know, it might be going out of bounds when in your first 5 years in the league, you would have cut it up
and put your shoulder down. Little things like that, I think, could come into play here. The other thing is, I mean, is it just going to be lingering? Like, is there going to be this back and forth all year? You know, clearly the trust between the player and the team isn't where it has been in the past, or potentially where it'll need to be going forward. So, you know, it's funny because you look at all those Seattle teams, right, the last few years, and that tension was really good for them, and then eventually it boiled over. I think that sort of tension can be good, and you're going to see this tension here with these with Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers. You know, now I think it's on Mike Tomlin, like it is so often in that locker room, to be able to sort of control and manage that going forward.
But you were on Friday, and right, and a lot of times people crap on Tomlin, and a lot of times it seems very justified.
Yeah,
but you are sort of on the side that he is. This may be one of the things that he's good at.
This is his value. Yeah, absolutely. And this is, I mean, like, this goes back to the 70s. I mean, I think you brought that up. Like, this has been who the Steelers have been forever, right?
Yeah.
Like, they've always had colorful personalities. They've always had edgy guys. You know, they've always had guys that like, you know, sort of walk that line. And the way that they've hired their coaches, going back to Chuck Knoll, has been, first and foremost, we want a guy who's a strong leader who can manage people. And when there are problems, that's absolutely what Bill Cowher was. Bill Cowher was never a guru when it came to the X's and O's, but was excellent at managing people. And I think Mike Tomlin's the same way. You know, he's a great, great, great leader, and he can galvanize the locker room, and he can fix problems. And over the years, that's allowed them to cast a wider net. Like, they can go get some players that other teams would consider off limits. I mean, a recent example is Martavius Bryant. You know, they can go and get really talented players that other teams wouldn't touch because they've had a program in place that can help these guys, that can manage some of the problems that these guys have. And so it's been to their advantage for a long, long time. I think that's a big reason why you see guys like that in those locker room, in the locker room in Pittsburgh over the years, and why it seems like a constant theme, like, where there's always something going on there.
All right, Bert. So one of the stories that's going to be fun to watch this year is whether or not John Gruden can use his outdated coaching style and pool noodles and actually have it work in 2018.
On top of the whole Khalil Mack situation.
Well, the Khalil Mack situation just added a new layer to that because, you know, he could have been a guy who went in and was like, you know, sold himself as being old school, and maybe that might have won him some fans in the locker room. But it sounds like the players didn't like one of his first major moves as a coach, and I know that he kind of helped pawn it off on the organization, but is this going to backfire on him?
All right, you know what? Like, let me flip this on you guys. What do you think Belichick would have done in the same situation?
Probably the same thing.
They would have moved him.
Like, I don't think he would have paid him that much, right? Like, I sort of, like, go back and I think of that. Now, it's obviously different. I mean, Bill's got a lot of skins in the wall, and Gruden just got back to Oakland, and a lot of his players know him almost solely as a TV commentator, you know? So it's a little bit different there, but I think, you know, I think there are two sides of this with Gruden. I think as a coach, he'll be fine. I mean, you know, Rich, you're talking about him like he's some sort of dinosaur. I mean, 20 years ago, he was Sean McVay. Like, everything we think of Sean McVay in Los Angeles now, that's what John Gruden was in Oakland. This guy who was innovative, forward-thinking, just, you know, the young offensive guru. That's who Gruden was, and I don't think he just lose that. So I think he can still coach. I think where the questions were at the end in Tampa, it was, does he have too much power? Look at his personnel decisions. Is the team too old? Have they drafted well enough? And, you know, now you sort of see those things again. And so I think Gruden's earned the benefit of the doubt as a coach. Like, I think when we turn on the TV on Monday night at 10 p.m. and they're going up against the Rams, I think it's going to be a well-coached team. I think the bigger question is, you know, who he is as a team builder. And there are fair questions to ask about that based on what happened in Tampa. And now we're seeing some of these really bold moves, like trading Khalil Mack and signing and bringing in all these older guys. And there are certainly hints of some of the things that happened at the end in Tampa. And so, you know, I think it's certainly fair to look at him and kind of have some skepticism towards the way that team is being put together.
All right, so Patriots as constituted. At the beginning of the season here, once again, I mean, we don't know who the hell he's going to be throwing to. This is going to be very, very strange for Tom Brady.
Two or three tough games right at the start.
Right. What's your prediction from what you've seen at the beginning of the season here?
I mean, I think they'll be fine. I think the receivers thing is going to, take a while to figure out. Yeah, I don't think they're going to come flying out of the gates. I think the defense still has holes. But at the end of the day, they still have Brady and Belichick. And I think one thing that helps them, that's going to give them some cushion here, is the division they play in and the conference they play in. If I had to rank the top 10 teams in the NFL right now, I think 8 of them would probably be in the NFC. And in their own division, they've got, 3 teams that have either seriously retooled or flat out rebuilding. And so, if it takes them 4 or 6 weeks to figure it out, and we've seen that happen the last few years, I think the fact that they're playing in the AFC East and the fact that they're in the AFC in general gives them the cushion to figure things out. And I think it's going to be one of those years where, at Halloween, when we get to right around Halloween and midseason, we still may not know what the hell they are. But I think that they're going to have enough time to figure it out where by the time they get to December, they're going to be where they usually are, which is getting ready to go in the playoffs.
Real quick, we just have 30 seconds before we got to give these tickets away. But have you heard anything about Scott Zolak's big, not theory, he says that he's heard pretty strong rumblings that the Patriots are going to bring in a high-caliber receiver. He mentioned Golden Tate level. Have you heard any rumblings about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've turned over some rocks on that. I mean, obviously, I respect the fact that Zoe is that Zoe's hearing what he's hearing. I don't think it's coming out of thin air, but I've turned over some rocks on Golden Tate. I've turned over some rocks on Demaryius Thomas. It doesn't seem like those guys are available right now. I don't doubt that they're out there looking. I just struggle to find a name at this point to attach to them.
All right. Burt Breer, MMQB, thank you so much, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Listening at home to Toucher and Rich is simple with your Amazon or Google smart speaker.
Oh, I need one of those.
Just say, play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I mean, when I look at probably the last 6 months, it's been the first time where I've taken a little break. If I'm going to do something at this point, it's going to be because I enjoy it. It's going to be hard to do. I think it's going to be very hard to do.
Ooh, there you go. 98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. So that is the little preview that they had for the epilogue of Tom versus Time. Tom versus Time, that was fairly interesting. You saw him getting rubbed down constantly by Guerrero. Mm-hmm. And then the one thing that was interesting about it more than anything was his talking as a human being about, family and the amount of dedication it took to play football and how he was reevaluating things. And it ended with him questioning the idea of how long he wanted to play football. So you said, wow, what a great ending. And much like The Hangover 2, you said, that's enough. And then they gave you The Hangover 3, and you said, out.
You said, that's enough. Hangover 2 was The Hangover 1, except in Thailand.
Yeah, regardless.
It was the exact same movie.
But okay, let's not get into that. But regardless, it was 1, 2, I'll say Jaws 2. So you get into it. And you go, oh, all right, that was nice. So then you hear this promo, and you think, ooh, well, maybe he has an announcement to make.
Mm-hmm.
But no, ladies and gentlemen, it was something that in a tight 5 minutes showed him with the military and showed what a fantastic individual he is for having the wherewithal to hang out with the military, and then get on a yacht and ride jet skis in Qatar.
Well, the best part of it is that you're watching it, and after the little part with the military and then the opening credits, which are about 45 seconds long, you look at the time left in Tom versus Time, and it's 4 minutes and 2 seconds. Like, hang on. The opening credits just finished, and I have 4 minutes left, and this thing has ending credits.
Right.
So how much content are we really getting here?
3 minutes. Okay. And so you say to yourself, all right, fantastic. What a nice guy.
It only takes 3 minutes to say I'm retiring after this year.
Right. But hey, you're with the military. Neato.
Okay. You hate the Ohio State logo on the tail.
Yeah.
That was another minute.
That was, yeah. And so then you go and you're jet skiing. So you say, Tom, ultimately, why? Why the epilogue? And here's what Tom has to say.
You have it right there.
I have it right here. Is it one, I would say?
Yeah, just start with number one there.
All right, here we go.
If I'm going to do something at this point, it's going to be because I enjoy it. The last couple years, a lot of parts about football weren't enjoyable when they should have been.
Okay, so this is... All right, what are you giving me, Tommy boy?
Mm-hmm.
All right, what do we got here?
Yep.
You're sitting down on the couch. You're breaking it down. We find out later you're looking at birds just like a normal cat. Quite literally.
Yeah.
Way to go, Tom.
And like a normal person.
Yeah, you're just...
He calls a birdhouse a...
I hear a little bird sanctuary right there.
It's a bird sanctuary.
Or as
sure.
I call it, a gruesome trap for blood. All right, so and so you go, all right, Tom, you're on the couch. Here we go.
Some of it was my approach.
I was lazy. That don't win championships.
And, you know, I think anytime you're together with people for a long period of time, relationships ebb and flow. And I think people are just, they're looking for something to write and talk about. I'm sure a lot of teams have things like that, but ours is just to the 10th degree.
Wait a second. So people are looking for things to write and talk about. Morin, you just put out something all off season about you questioning if you wanted to play football anymore. And what people are looking for, you just handed something to people. And by the way, people in your own organization are going out and they're tripping all over each other to talk to writers and on the record.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, whose fault is this? You created the whole mystery if you're going to play again. You are the one you're the one who put out a book that said, look at me, concussion juice. I can live forever. I won't get sunburned. Maybe I should have taken that advice because I wouldn't have my skin turning colors of all different natures.
That's the actual name of the book, by the way.
The whole thing.
Yeah, it's called Concussion Sauce, How I Fell for a Scam Artist. All right, so it continues.
I'm learning to deal with it better. I don't still get that much anymore.
Whoa!
Tommy!
What's up? And then he snapped his fingers and the jukebox started playing.
No, then he just lit up a Pall Mall and was just like, who cares? He was hit his feet out of a Trans Am window in the parking lot of school.
And then all of a sudden, Dennis actually came and said, my man, just gave him a high five. Him and Jeff Fisher just took off together, peeled out.
He's like, let's get ourselves into some blue jeans. All right, here we go.
I'm learning to deal with it better. I don't still get that much anymore about anything, you know. Like, I think a lot of keeping things in perspective, like, nothing's that big a deal to me anymore. And maybe I'm just caring about certain things that really matter. Like my family, like, you know, people's health, you know, like life and death. But to worry about a lot of bull that people may say or think or feel, like, I really don't care anymore.
Okay, so I'm looking at the time left on the video, and I'm like, okay, there's 48 seconds left, and he hasn't told us anything we don't know yet. This is all things that have been said here in the off season. He's been talking to, remember, Jim Gray and all these things. Like, these are all things that we kind of knew at this point. So I'm like, here we go. 48 seconds to break it to us.
Didn't tell Oprah.
What do you
so
got?
He's going to tell us.
Yeah, what do you got?
You went on. This is a necessary thing. You felt that you needed an epilogue. You felt that you needed to cap this thing with something. You were obviously unhappy in some way, shape, or form about how this whole thing was interpreted. Let's put a cap on it. Mm-hmm. Let's tell the people what gives. And Tommy Boy did just that. So here is, ladies and gentlemen, what we were all on pins and needles waiting for and how the whole damn thing ended.
I would love to play 5 more years. I'd love to play 41, 42, 43, 44, 45. It would be a challenge for me. I don't think it's going to be easy.
All right, so great. Thanks.
Something you said at least 3 or 4 times in the last calendar year.
You put that on Instagram, remember? Yeah, right, it's a Quarenta e, what is it, Zingo? Is that 45?
Yes.
Quarenta, Quincenta?
I know exactly why he did this. Is because people took, and why he said the thing about he doesn't effing care anymore, is because when he said he was thinking about his family and the rigors of football, people started questioning the TB12 method, so he felt, oh boy, this is the exact opposite of what I wanted to come out of this, so I'm going to have to create this thing that gets back to the point that miraculously 10 years in football is a very long time. I have managed to play 18 years in the NFL. I can play 5 more. I've played better the last 8 years than I have in my first 10. TB12, TB12, TB12. That is absolutely why he did this.
Well, I think we were talking about that, is that this was to show that, no, I know it's going to be tough, but I'm going to keep on going because I'm using this pliability workout, and TB12.com, order your nuts right now.
Yeah, but the thing is that he realized that that's not the way the first, you know, how the whole thing was interpreted.
Yeah, I'm getting exhausted. I don't think I can do it anymore. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Right. So, I mean, this wasn't, they didn't plan on doing this, I would imagine. I don't think, you know, a couple days before the season opener that they expected to release an epilogue of the thing. He obviously felt like he had to go back and do something. They didn't put, I mean, they used B-roll footage of him and Cutter and then had him on his couch. They obviously didn't. They haven't been following him around. I mean, this is stuff that happened in the past.
It's going to be hard to do. I think it's going to be very hard to do. But I think I can do it.
And once you stop, you're done. And I think I'm not ready to say that I'm done because I don't feel like I am. I still like feel there's things to accomplish. It'd be like getting close to the top of the mountain. I'd be like, ah, that's good. I'm good. It's like, no, you're really hard to get to this point. Why not finish it off?
Well, if you're at the top of the mountain, you finished it off. What, are you going to climb the sky? You going to plant a beanstalk? What a terrible analogy. Or metaphor, whatever it is. You know, when you get to the top of the mountain, you say, hey, I'm on top of the mountain. Like, no, there's more. No, there's not. You're at the top of the mountain.
Yeah. So you can jump real high.
Yeah, I suppose you could take a leap.
You know, jump on a cloud like Super Mario.
Once you get to the top of the mountain, get news for you. You're at the top.
Look at my career from, I don't know, 30, 32, 33 on, you know, like a lot of players retire at 33, you know, I mean, you look at football, 10-year career, that's an amazing career. I mean, I think the last 8 years of my career have been better than the first 10, so I should just prolong it.
So, okay, so what he's saying there quite literally, and he said it, is that, listen, 10 years is miraculous. What I'm doing... effing mind-blowing.
It's better than a miracle.
Yes, it's a... I mean, that is...
like
a,
God could even whip up one of these suckers.
I mean, that is a tremendous, tremendous feat to play 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at old TB, last day's been better for the first deck. Hell.
Do we have any magician music?
Hell. Let's just roll the dice and see if it comes up Cinco.
Or Quarenta y Cinco.
That's right.
In the Spanish he used.
The B-man plans on putting in a little work. So that was it. That was, as Rich did the math, under 4 minutes of just to say, hey, remember casting all the doubt and saying all these things about my family and the NFL and not being happy? Oh, that was all just kind of BS.
To worry about a lot of bull that people may say or think or feel, like, I really don't care.
Yeah, you don't anymore. By the way, you're right. At this point, now that he said it, I don't want to hear any moaning about like when you might be retiring or not.
We've heard it both sides. We've heard it all over the place.
We didn't want
to play. Now you do want to play. You've covered it all. We don't need any more.
Oh no,
any more views into your soul.
No. There's nothing to care about now other than Sunday.
There is only one thing from this, other than the fact that he calls a birdhouse a bird sanctuary.
A bird sanctuary.
Which, once again, he doesn't know how to be a normal human being. There is one legitimate thing that I thought when I watched this, is that, okay, let's say you are going to play until you're 45, and you are not enjoying football that much anymore around the people that you're with. Does that mean, in your opinion, he is not going to retire as a Patriot?
No.
Because I immediately thought,
no.
His time, when his contract's done, he's gone.
Yeah.
He's somewhere else.
I'm playing five more years, period. He didn't say, I love this organization, I'm going to stay with him forever. No, he's saying, I'm going to play five more years. Whoever wants to pay me for five more years is fine.
That's the one thing I got out of this.
If
you're going to go that long and you don't like the people that you're with, when the contract's done, you're gone.
I don't believe anything that he said. I don't believe that he intends on doing anything like that. I think that he just... was saying that I intend to play five more years. I don't think there's any way the Crafts let him go. And that's
he brought
just the
up
way
the relationship thing, and he was very kind of left it open ended. You know, you're with someone for a long period of time. Some relationship, I'm paraphrasing. Some relationships go through their ups and downs. He didn't say, you know, I love where I work. Bill Belichick's a great head coach, and I love the people I'm with. He had plenty of opportunity. I mean, he made an epilogue to say whatever he wanted to say.
It was about
him.
Didn't
say anything.
It was the whole thing was about him. Well, it wasn't about the Patriots.
He wanted to control the narrative, right?
Right, but yeah, but the whole thing was about him personally. I think it would have been out of character of the documentary to mention the Patriots by name. I mean, the whole thing is me, which was interesting. Now with this epilogue, I don't need to know anything else. Yeah. All I want is more book.
The first, actually, all the episodes until yesterday's I found fascinating. Heck, I found the one after the Super Bowl fascinating because everything changed. The tone of everything changed.
And alongside the Wickersham article and all that stuff, you thought there might be something there, but alas, 'twas not the case.
I just don't get that much anymore.
We got tickets to see the Patriots coming up at 9:30 in the morning today. And 617-779-0985, you can call it.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich. Be listening today at 9:30 in the morning for your chance to get tickets to the opening day game over there at the Gillette Stadium. I will be in Detroit. I'll be attending the Cardinals-Tigers game, and then Monday Night Football, the Jets-Lions. Now, we're staying downtown. I have a friend coming in from Atlanta, and obviously I have friends in Detroit, but I am concerned about a Monday getting up and making it till 7 o'clock with still having the ability to remember the game. That is, we're staying at a casino,
mm-hmm.
and you know, Monday everyone's working. I don't know if anyone has any of advice what two men in their 40s can go do that doesn't require just sitting at a bar,
other than sleep.
Yeah, but it's. Oh, by the way, do you think it's weird that I'm sharing a room with him?
If you have two beds, no.
Yeah, Hardy thought it was very odd.
Put it this way, I wouldn't. Like me, I would get my own room just because I'm weird. And I do strange things I don't want anyone to know about. But I would, but doing it, if that's the way it was set up, no. As long as you both got your own bed, you're fine.
Yeah, like I never even thought about it.
Yeah.
As being, as like an option of not staying in the same room.
Well, you remember when I used to go to my friends to Vegas, and I had a guy who was like the cheapest man on the planet, and he would put us at like the Binions are just like the crappiest. Like, I mean, hotel rooms there were fairly inexpensive, but I remember one time we stayed at the Bally's and he called me. He's like, all right, man, I got a room. It's $58. So split between the four of us, it's going to be next to nothing, you know, like $15 a person. I'm like, hey, split between the four of us. Like, how many beds are in this place? He goes, well, there's two. You know, two guys per bed.
Yeah, head to toe, nothing weird.
At the time, I was like 33. I'm like, I think I'm a little too old for that, man. Like, at some point when you're not in college, you know, splitting a room with one guy, having your own bed, but I'm not spooning with a guy. I was way too old for that.
No. Even when I turned 40, I stayed in a room with three guys and someone slept on the floor. I don't know what the deal is. It just never occurred to me, except for on business trips, to get separate rooms.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. I mean, I think it's fine. I just preferred to not. Unless the rooms are extremely expensive. Like, if it's crazy, then yeah, sure, I would.
No, 50. Well, first of all, I'm not staying at a hotel that's $50 a night because that does not guarantee everything sanitized.
You don't want to stay at the Clown Hotel in Vegas?
No, I'm going to guess that the staff is not really on point with being rigorous.
Staff, I thought you meant what you could catch from the sheets.
That, well, that's sort of where I'm going is that, you know, I don't think housekeeping is overly concerned with the cleanliness of the bedding. I'm guessing if it's $50 a night, they're not the most well-compensated housekeeping staff on the planet. Or that the mattresses are changed about every 50 years.
Right.
So, no, I'm not, under any circumstances that I can think of, even if I never worked again, would I stay? I just wouldn't go anywhere than stay in a $50 a night hotel room.
But this is like an all right hotel, right?
So I mean,
oh, no. I have no idea how much the room is, but it's not like really expensive. But no, it's Greek Town Casino.
Hardy's got to loosen up. If it's a two beds, no, who cares?
Yeah, it never even occurred to me not to stay in the same room as the guy. All right, Rich, what do we have coming up after the headlines?
Okay, we've been doing a lot of city council maniacs who show up, but sometimes, and this is nothing political, but sometimes in our own Senate and Congress, a maniac shows up.